Okay, so Dina de Bar Mitzvah. I love this sugya. I really do. I think it's a beautiful sugya that touches on very important conceptual points in terms of how do we integrate the Araisa values into rabbinic law when it's not mere application. So let's just remind ourselves what Dina de Bar Mitzvah is. As you've seen a little bit in the Gemara Bava Metzia, the exact parameters obviously is what we're trying to figure out. But fundamentally, Dina de Bar Mitzvah literally means the law of the person who lives on your border. And sometimes you'll see it as matzarnut, the laws of borderness, borderhood, bordering, whatever. Yeah, but it really literally means border. Here it really means border. And the law basically is that under certain circumstances, the right of first acquisition of a property, assuming the person is willing to buy it for the same price as anybody else bidding, goes to the person whose property neighbors yours. That is what Dina de Bar Mitzvah means. The parameters are obviously, the exact parameters are more complicated, but that's the rule. Yes. No. Like, if there's a bidding war and there are two equivalent bids, the person who lives next door gets, right? They can't, if someone else is willing to pay double, right, then, and the neighbor says it's not worth paying double, then the person who pays double gets it. But you have to give the right, the first right, to the neighbor to put in his bid and match the bid of somebody else. So right, things get complicated if you say, right, if you, like, try to manipulate them, but let's leave it easy for now, okay? We're not assuming manipulation, right? Yaakov owns a field, Ezra wants to buy it, but Yonatan lives next door, right? So as long as Yonatan is willing to match Ezra's offer, Yaakov has to offer it to Yonatan first. Yes. Oh, for sure. Obviously, there are complexities here. Right? This is the basic law. The complexities we want to figure out. But this is the basic law. And the Gemara tells us that what does it come from? What is the source of this law? All the Gemara says is Vasita Hayashar Vatov. Because the Torah says, do what is right and just. That's it. Right? Do that which is right and just. And from there, you know Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Now, obviously, no one's claiming that this is the one and only interpretation of the Pasuk. It means it is something that emerges from this Pasuk. So what we need to, the first thing we got to figure out is, in what sense does this come from this Pasuk? So the most expansive and coherent thesis on this pasuk in the Rishonim are the very well-known and celebrated comments, as it rains on me, of the Ramban. So, the Ramban, let me give you a little bit of background and then you'll tell me what the Ramban says. The Ramban, in three places in the Torah, makes a very radical claim. He says that the Torah, by definition, cannot be exhaustive. There is no, even God has no, I guess he has the ability, but has no interest, and human beings would have, has, and God has no interest, human beings have no capability, of listing every law, no, not every law, sorry, the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do in every possible manifestation of human interactions that could happen throughout all of history. That is not something that interested God. God did not care to do this, and it would be completely unfeasible. So therefore, what did God do according to the Ramban? What? No! What did he say? Come on, be more careful. Very good. So here is Ad Hayom. I heard this the first time, my first week in yeshiva on Shabbos from Rabbi Liebtag. So Elul of 2006. And it still is the best explanation of the Ramban. The way he describes the Ramban is as follows. According to the Ramban, the mitzvot are the plots in a connect-the-dots picture. God wants to paint a picture of what it means to be godly, to be good. To that end, he plots many different things on this picture. Those are called the mitzvot. But when he's finished, he says, and in all the gray cases where there isn't a specific mitzvah that tells you do this or don't do this, you should be guided by the spirit of the law. And what is the spirit of the law? It's the picture that emerges when you connect the dots that are the mitzvot. Right? That is, Bikitsur, the Ramban's thesis of the world. Okay? Yes. So let's get to that. That's the million-dollar question in this sugya. But before we get to it, let's just trace his thesis. So he says, right, someone want to read me part of the Ramban? Yeah. Yeah, what does he say? Right, so he says, the simple pshat is, keep the mitzvot and do the right thing. Right? That's the simple pshat. Okay, yeah. What? I'm listening to you. I don't have it in front of me at the moment because my svarim over there. That's okay. And I'm getting rained on, so you know. I'm actually not. I'm right under this awning, so I'm not getting rained on, but it feels it sounds like I am, but I'm actually not. Yeah. But it's not hail. We had hail last night. I heard you had rain. We had hail. I don't know why. We had lightning and thunder, but we also had hail. It felt like it was supposed to rain, and in the beginning, it just felt like a bucket of ice was just dropped on us. It sounded terrifying for 10 minutes. It was very weird, because it's 80 degrees still. We do often get hail when you get rain, because I'm higher up in the mountains, yes. But this was weird, because it's hot. But anyways, yeah, so we got hail. Very good. But anyway, so what does Ramban say? Yeah. Right, and it'll be good for you. Okay. Ah. Good, right? And then the Ramban, right? So he says at some level this just means be good, follow the mitzvot, etc. But then what does he add? Right, they have a nice midrash, and what do they say? Pshara. Right, so the rabbis say this is compromise. I see that Yashar Vatov means compromise. Okay. Good. And then, right, it means to compromise. And then what do they say? To act. Yeah, so normally it's translated beyond the letter of the law, though technically in Hebrew it's the opposite. Right? Lifnim Mishur Adin means within the letter of the law, means, right, the conceptualization in halacha is very different. Right, Clapper pointed this out to me once, Gavi. Right, that Lifnim Mishur Adin doesn't mean, right, in like secular law you call it going beyond the letter of the law. In Torah it means Lifnim Mishur Adin is don't demand what you could demand legally. Right? Stay within, hold yourself back. Right, the conceptualization is actually very different. Right, the imagery is very different. Lifnim Mishur Adin, stay within. Right, and that's what it sometimes means. But technically, the phrase Lifnim Mishur Adin means to basically be able to hold yourself back from demanding the full letter of the law. Right, demanding what you could. It's not us for you to demand it. Under some circumstances, you hold yourself back. You go, right? Right? It's not really caught, right? The English, right? There is a very fancy English word for what people think Lifnim Mishur Adin is, but I used it once in Rambam on a test. When the Sugya answered Lifnim Mishur Adin, I answered on the test. He acted in a super erogatory fashion in 10th grade. And the teacher marked me right. And he's like, I don't know what that word means, but I'm assuming that you knew what you were talking about. You think the words, I'm just going to assume that's the right answer. The teacher was very smart. It just happened to be that his PhD was in theoretical mathematics and not in English.
So why is that? It is like the best thing to hold yourself back from using like the full amount of the law you can. And why was that so much the law this week?
Yeah. Again, all this is going to come to the fore in our sugya, right? That's one of the reasons I like the sugya so much. Okay, but then the Ramban introduces his main thesis, right? He says, Chazal say, Vasili Yashar V'Tov, is that sometimes you should compromise, act the Lifnim Mishur Adin. And then he introduces, right, his very radical thesis, which is, right?
Is it
an ayin or a ayin? And now.
Okay, and now.
I would pull up on my phone, but I'm doing the recording on my phone, so I'm not sure I can do both. I'm not going to risk it. I'll risk it not when I'm in the middle of doing share. Yeah. Right. Right. Very good. So you know what? I didn't tell you technically to do it. I want you to act. And this is where the Ramban starts his thesis. Right? He says, Chazal say it's compromise. But he says, what's the real yisod? It's even when I didn't command you, I want you to try to do what you think God wants. And then he says what? Very good. God loves the good. Yeah. Yeah, right, all actions, right? He says, it is impossible for the Torah to detail every act that a person might do. Impossible. Right? Now, you might say, what's impossible for God? But apparently, he thought it was either impossible for God or impossible for human beings to fathom it, and therefore not worth God's time, or whatever. Yeah. Yes, Adam.
I don't know what it means, and I just say it comes up question, but before that, why are we saying you need to hold yourself back?
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. Yeah. Slowly, we're getting there.
Okay.
Right? Look, the answer is going to be that the Torah demands more from us than what is enforceable, right? But part of the reason that you, as we'll see in the case of Dina Bar Mitzvah, is that just because we say you should hold yourself back doesn't mean you should always hold yourself back. That which is law, you do always. Those that are values have competing values, right? And we'll see, right? Rashi is going to be the one who says it might depend. Are you dealing with a poor person or a rich person? Because it's very nice to tell a rich person, don't demand all the money that you're owed. But if you can't survive, right, then you're allowed to demand what is coming to you, right? So you don't formulate into law. If you formulate into law, then it applies to everyone. But if you put it as a value, that means this is the type of thing you should consider. But there are competing values, and you're not forced to do it. You're forced to take it into account, right? That's a general answer. But the specifics are what we'll see a little bit of. But he says the Torah cannot detail everything. So what does it do instead? You can pass me the middle book over there, and then I can look at what you're, the middle book between, under my Gemara. There you go. Thank you. Right, so yeah, we'll read. Right, he says, "Lefisha ain efshar laskir b'Torah kol anagodanav im shchina v'reiav." You can't mention all the laws of activities of a person with his neighbors and friends. V'chol maseh umatano, every business deal, v'tikunei yeshuv, v'midinot kulam, and every political thing on how to keep stability and a moral study of acharei shehizkir b'hem harbeh. After the Torah gave you a lot of points, again, use this image in your head of a plot, connect the dots. He put a lot of dots, like, lo telech rachil, don't be a gossip monger, lo titor, don't take revenge or hold a grudge, lo ta'amar al dam reyecha, don't stand by idly by your friend's blood, lo tikal al cheresh, don't curse the deaf, mibnei shtei takum, stand up for the elderly, the chayot ben, and the like. Chazar lomar b'derech klal, he said, do the good in everything. Of which one of those is compromise, and one of those is within or beyond the letter of the law. And another example is the law of Dina de Bar Mitzra. And speaking nicely, being nice to people, etc. So the Ramban has this theory that the Torah has no interest in listing everything you should do morally, religiously. What it does is it gives you a guide called the mitzvot, and you are responsible for figuring out the spirit of the law and guiding your actions based on the spirit of the law everywhere else. The Ramban says this in three places. Vasisa Vayashar Vatov, he says this in the context of what we call Ben Adam L'Chaviro. By Kedoshim Tihu, he says it by Ben Adam L'Makom. Right? So, for example, there he says, the Torah doesn't want you to be a glutton. But instead of telling you don't be a glutton, it makes many laws in the appetitive realm. Right? Meaning limiting appetite. Kashrus and whatever. And that shows you that you shouldn't be obsessed with the appetite. Kedoshim Tihu tells you not to be a glutton, right? Or it emerges from there. The Torah wants you to have self-control when it comes to the sexual laws, so it makes many sexual laws. But you could be a glutton, especially before the ban on polygamy, you could be a glutton for sex within the confines of the Torah. The Torah doesn't want you to do that, but it doesn't forbid it. It gives you guides and shows you that the Torah wants you to limit it, right? These are the Ramban's examples, some of them. He has others. And then his third one is by Shabbaton, right? That the Torah wants you to create a Shabbos dick experience. But that's a story for another time. But then the Ramban says that an example of this is Dina de Bar Mitzra. So now, someone tell me, what does that mean? What is the relationship, if the Ramban is correct, what is the connection between this meta-value called Asis of Yashar Vatov and Dina de Bar Mitzra? Go ahead, Yaakov.
When you're letting a neighbor buy is not only just a more property for him, like it would be other guy buying it.
Very good, right? So the localized explanation here is, look, what do you care? If you're getting your money, what do you care? Right? Right? What do you care? Right? You're getting your money. You don't owe it to the other guy, right? Ezra and Yonatan are both offering the same price on the property. But what does Yaakov care? He gets his... I don't know where he lives, so, I mean, I know where he lives. I don't know where in this imaginary scenario he's living, right? What? It's not quite that cheap, but, like, when I was in Toronto, I would always give the example of Toronto versus Alberta, right? But, okay, Milwaukee is somewhere in between. Fine. But whatever it is, he's getting his, let's be nice here, his $500,000 for this property. See, by me, that's nothing. By me, the empty plots of, for a semi-attached house, the plots right now are going for 1.7 million shekel. So, right, in Efrat. And like, by my in-laws in like Toronto, forget it. Like, tear-down houses are $2 million in Toronto. It's insane. What? 27 what? Oh. God. That's like when I was going through Rochester and I saw a four-bedroom house for $17,000. And I'm like, I could write you a check if you want. You know, like...
When they fixed it up, it was like 150.
Yeah. It was really crazy. In Rochester, like these houses, I'm telling you, these 12-bedroom houses on like 3 acres of land, like $400,000. I'm like, a 12-bedroom house where I live, forget it. It's like... Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't. Yeah. It's crazy. Anyways. Yeah, I think Efrat is more expensive than Teaneck these days, but, you know. But I think so. What? I don't know if it's a race. I think we might have pulled ahead by a long time. What? Yeah, exactly. For people who want to buy, for me who already bought, maybe I'm winning. I don't know. Good question. So that's the logic here. But here's what I want to ask you. Okay, what does it mean when the rabbis... say that a law is based on Vasita Hayasher Bahato? What does that mean? Meaning, it's not biblical, but it's also not biblical. Right? So what is it? Okay, good. So here's what the problem is that there are different ways that you can imagine the connection between a meta-biblical value and a rabbinic law taking effect. What are the different ways you can imagine it? Okay? So, what are the ways? I want to push you to think, and that's why I gave you minimal sources. What are the ways in which this could happen? Or let me put it differently. Okay? No, you know what? I'm not going to give you any more clues. I want to hear what you have to say first. Right? When the rabbis are instituting a rabbinic law which has a generic biblical source pasuk, so what, how would you describe legally what they did? Yeah, Rami.
Setting parameters to, I really like that. Like, you really are in a sense of creating a possibility.
Okay, you said two different things, and that's very important. Say both of them again.
So they are sort of in a sense creating a mental, because by creating parameters, you are, like I said, is a, like, you can't have a mental that doesn't have any parameters.
Okay, so let me pull it apart. Okay, I'll take other answers, then we'll pick apart what was just said. Yes. Ezra, Yaakov.
You can say that, like, either they are saying how the Hashem is manifested, or you're saying that is like the authority to create something new.
Okay. Yaakov? No, no, I want to, as a general statement.
In general, they're telling you what is it, a, what the Torah is explaining, what the Torah is.
Very good. Okay. So what we have between the three of you is different formulations. One way to envision what they're doing is that they're not making a law at all. They are describing. Meaning, the Torah says there's this value called Vasita Vayashavatov. According to the Ramban, you should know what that looks like. But just in case you didn't know what it looked like, the rabbis describe it for you. Meaning, God himself would agree with the roles of a season of Asher, of whatever it might be, but he didn't spell it out. So sometimes the rabbis simply spell it out. That's all they're doing. But what you're really doing is performing an act which is fundamentally a manifestation of a biblical meta-value. Sometimes that's not what they're doing. Sometimes, what do they do? As Ezra said in one way and Rami said in a slightly different way, they are creating a rabbinic law which concretizes a biblical meta-value. Meaning, okay, well then that was what I think Ezra was saying. Or if he wasn't, he's going to nod and say that's what he was saying, right? But they, right, sometimes what they're doing is they say as follows. The Torah tells you to be good and be nice. But sometimes there are some actions that we think so obviously fall in that category that we are going to formalize those meta values into law. So the law is itself rabbinic, but it's not random. It's the rabbis chose to formalize what is also an expression of a meta value. So giving tzedakah is a biblical mitzvah because there's a pasuk. Lending money to a poor person, or maybe to anybody, is a biblical mitzvah because there's a pasuk. Saying good morning to someone is, and making them feel good, is a biblical value, but not like a mitzvah, right? It's not a pasuk that says do that. There are things like love your neighbor as yourself, and you would like to be greeted. So it's an expression of the biblical mitzvah, but it's not a biblical mitzvah, it's a biblical value. But sometimes what the rabbis did is they said, so let's take our case. So you could say, well, look, if Yaakov said, oh, I'm going to let Yehonatan buy the property because that's the right thing to do, and I'm not losing money anyways. So if there were no Dina de Bar Mitzvah, I would say, yeah, he's channeling Vasita V'yasharatov. He's being a good person. But is that all the rabbis are doing? Are they doing what Yaakov said? Are they describing it and saying, maybe you didn't realize, but giving the right of first acquisition to a neighbor, that's a nice thing to do. They're describing the biblical mitzvah. Or are they saying, no, no, no. This is such an obvious instantiation of goodness that we are going to formalize into rabbinic law your obligation to, in this case, manifest that biblical value in this particular way. Okay? And even if you say the latter, you still got to push it farther. Okay? Because let's assume that the rabbis are doing the second. Okay? They still can approach that in one of two ways, or many ways. One way is to say, oh, help me here. Let's assume that what they're doing in a given circumstance is not just describing, but legislating a particular instantiation of a biblical value. Okay? Let me give you an example. Okay? Let me give you another example. Someone open up the following. I want you to open up. Someone can open up on Svaria. Open up the Rambam. Or if you have your 12-volume Rambam, you can do that as well. Your one-volume 12, whatever. Your one-volume Rambam, that's what I meant. Tired. The Rambam to Hilchot Avel, Perek Yud Daled, Halacha Aleph. Perek Yud Daled, Halacha Aleph, Hilchot Avel. So the Rambam says, you have it? Avdal is all the way at the end of the Rambam in Shoftim. All the way at the end. All the way. Keep turning. Keep turning. Perek Yudalad, Halacha Aleph. Rambam. What? Halacha. Rambam. Yudalad Aleph. What does he say? Right, he says, mitzvah aseh shel divreihem levaker cholim. There's a rabbinic mitzvah to visit the sick. And? Menachem aveilim. To comfort the dead. And he gives a whole bunch of examples. And then what does he say in the last line? Skip to the end of the halacha. Right before that. Says, okay, read the whole halacha, because the last sentence, it's not like the last line. I'm not visually looking at how it is on Sfari. I have no idea. Yeah. Very good. Af al pi shekol mitzvot elu midivrehen harehen. Very good. He says, even though these are all rabbinic, harehen bichlal v'haftorecha kamocha. They are within v'haftorecha kamocha. So you look at the Rambam, and many people look at it and say, that's contradictory. What does that mean? It's a mitzvah asei midirei, the mitzvah asei midirei. It's rabbinic. Okay. I have to be on one side or the other of this thing, because otherwise I will kill myself when I try to back up, because it will trip me. There's a rabbinic mitzvah to visit the sick. And it's within the biblical mitzvah of v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. What's the Rambam saying? Before the rabbi said visit the sick, if you visit the sick, did you fulfill v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha?
Yeah.
Of course. But what did the rabbis do under some circumstances?
Codified.
They codified, they formalized certain types of kindness into rabbinic mitzvah. So, saying good morning to your friend is a kiyum of v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. And that's it. But visiting the sick is a kiyum of the formalized version of Avdol Recha Kamocha called Bikur Cholim, plus a kiyum of the biblical mitzvah of Avdol Recha Kamocha. But it's clear that the rabbis were motivated to formalize visiting the sick as a rabbinic mitzvah, as a fulfillment of the biblical mitzvah called Avdol Recha Kamocha. Now, when the rabbis do that, and they set it up as a formal law, so there are different ways they could do that. I'm trying to do this in a way that I'm not going to give away anything, because I want you to think about it. Okay? Fine. What is the difference between the following two instructions? Drive safely and stop at red lights. What are the difference between those two? Yes, Yonatan.
So one is telling you what, they're both following the same idea, but one is telling you this is the idea and
meaning?
One.
Yeah, Yaakov.
One is follow the letter of the law, and the other is follow the spirit of the law.
Right. Meaning one of those is, here's a codified law, that if I would ask you what is the motivation for it, you'd say driving safely. The other one is the principle upon which it's based. But now, and we've used this example before, what if it is 2 in the morning, there's nobody on the road. You know there's nobody on the road. It's not even a chash. There's nobody on the road. You see nobody for miles around. And you're at a red light. And you run the red light. Okay, we've used the example before. And there's a red light camera, and now you get a ticket. And you go to court, and you say, Mapito, how can you say that I get a ticket? You're supposed to drive safely. I drove safely. There was no one around. What will the judge say?
We need to hit certain quotas, so...
They probably won't admit that, but sure. Right? What will they say?
You violated
the letter of the law. You're right, philosophically, right? But you're wrong, legally. Yeah.
According to the Ramban, why would the rabbi then codify the law if they're going to have
some... okay, good. So here's the million-dollar question. Is Dina de Bar Mitzvah is clearly a law, as the Ramban notes, that is a fulfillment of a biblical value. It is. Right? Of Asidi Asher Vatov. It's something that, had the rabbis not said it, and Yaakov lets Yehonatan buy the property next to him, we would say, you know, that was a nice thing to do. That's what a good Torah mensch does, right? That's what you should do. Fine. The rabbis codified it. But here's what we got to figure out. In what way did they codify it? One way, there are three ways they could do this. One is, which in this case is probably not true, is just describing, which is the rabbis want you to do this. You look at the Gemara in Bava Metzia, it's very clear. Is that what's going on here? Absolutely not. Because the Gemara is not saying they're describing it. They're enforcing it. They're saying under certain circumstances, if you don't violate it, can I take your property away from you? Right? It's clear that they're actually talking law. Right? They're not just describing something. They made a law. But there are still two ways within law they could do it. One is to say, let's go back to our traffic light case. Very good. Right? Or, I want to be even sharper. There's really three possibilities. Only when the spirit applies, always, or... No. Or always as long as it doesn't go against the spirit of the law. Right? Those are the three possibilities in front of Chazal. Right? Meaning one is to say this is a blanket law, always. One is to say it's a law only when the spirit of the law applies. And one is to say, no, it's a law even if it isn't the spirit of the law, right? But if it contradicts the spirit of the law, so then the law doesn't apply. Or in other words, is Va'asita Hayasher Vatov, now let's use our case, is it the motivation for the law, or does it continue to be part of the form of the law? Right? You understand the distinction? Meaning one way is to say the rabbis were motivated by Vasita Yasher Vatov. But once they set up the law, it functions like law with no exceptions.
So,
and therefore, sometimes it'll apply and it will fulfill its goal. Sometimes it'll apply when it's neutral with regard to its goal. And sometimes it might even apply when it's counterproductive to its stated goal. But it was the motivation for the law. But once we made the law, the law is the law is the law. Or do you say, no, the rabbi set up the law because of the value of Asita Yasher Vatov, but maybe they're definitely going to enforce it when it doesn't go against, when it's within, in line with the spirit. Maybe or maybe they won't enforce it when it's neutral, but they definitely won't enforce it if it goes against, because the spirit of the law, the motivator of the law, continues to animate the application of the law.
Rabbi, if I know anything about the Ramban, I think the former is the
okay. If you really think that I spent 40 minutes getting to this point because we're going to then say, and this is the answer, and we're done, and there's no machloket, then, you know.
I don't know. I sort of like have it as like practice, like, I always sort of want to walk back on the road.
Okay. how far did guys get? Did anyone get to the Gemara in Bava Batra? No. Okay, fine. So you're going to see that the biggest, the most major and most extreme machloket about this is going to be Rashi versus Tosfos. Where Rashi is going to say one thing and Tosfos is going to say the exact opposite, and not just like the exact opposite, right? Literally, Rashi is going to say something which is going to be predicated on this is a nice thing to do, right? And Tosfos' response is we don't care about being nice, right? Technically, that's not the way he said it. He said, we have no mercy in judgment, right? That's what Tosfos is going to say. Ein mirachem in badin. So I don't know which is harsher. The way Tosfos actually said it, the way I said it, I don't know which is worse. But before we get there, let's look at the original sugya. And I want you, as we look through this, to, you know, we'll do this over... I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Okay. So, Amar Rav Yehuda. Let's look at the Gemara. This is the main pick of Dina Bar Mesra. Amar Rav Hai, which is probably, I will point out, Rav Hai is probably in this case in Amar Rav, though there are people who think that this is actually a Gaonic addition to the Gemara, and this is Rav Hai Gaonic that somehow made it in. I believe there are people who think that. Because we don't have any other evidence of a person named Rav Hai. In certain circumstances, the Gaonim do make it in into some verse. There are places in like Bava Metzia where the Ramban just says this whole Amud is Gaonic. It's just like it was like a Gaonic gloss that ended up getting incorporated into the Gemara by the time it got to him. Many hundreds of years after the Gemara. Many hundreds of years. Yes. No, we're talking several hundred years. But this is, let's assume this is Gemara, okay? So Amar Rav Hai, man de'achzik b'nei achei u'b'nei shutvei chatzifa. What does that mean? Chatzifa. What's chatzifa? What?
Annoying.
What?
Annoying.
Chutzpah. Chatzifa. He has chutzpah. Right? That is chutzpah. Chatzifa. Chutzpah. So then the Gemara says, okay, we get it. Holding onto your property between two neighbors, right? Between two partners or between two brothers. That's being a jerk, right? But then the Gemara says, Hebe saluke lo misalkin in life. But if he does have it, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't force him off the property. Where Rav Nachman Amar, na misalkin in life. You can remove him. Now, this is not a case of Dina de Bar Mesra yet. Okay? Right? This is Achzuke. He already, right? But the next case is Dina de Bar Mesra. Presumably, this is where he's holding on to it, right? Achzuke.
Like he didn't just buy it.
Right. I mean, we don't know the backstory here.
So that means it's like, if someone is buying someone's property, and then that person's brother buying the property at the same time, and they can just like.
So I don't want to. So it's a fascinating case, but I definitely didn't want to get too bogged up, and I want to focus on Dina de Bar Mesra, which is the next one. But the parameters of that one are complicated. Yeah. Yaakov. Okay, but let's focus on the next line. The Gemara says, "V'i mishum dina de bar metzra lo misalkinan lei narda amrei afil mishum dina de bar metzra misalkinan lei mishum shenemar vasita hayashar vatov v'nei Hashem." So the Gemara has two cases: the case of avzuke and the case of dina de bar metzra, where the Gemara in each case has a machloket. What's the machloket? Can you remove the person, right? So let's take the Dina Bar Mesra case. Meaning, if Yaakov says, you know what, I know this would never happen, but I had a fight with Yoho this morning, and therefore, just because I can, I'm going to sell the property to Ezra.
Yeah.
Right? So now, can the court come and say, You know, Yaakov, you really shouldn't have sold it to Ezra. Yoho is your neighbor. The courts will say it just like that, Yoho. Right? They will specifically be not... What? He's not your neighbor. You're moving. You're moving. Or whatever. You think that your neighbors will like Yonatan more than they'll like Ezra, and you want to annoy your neighbors. I don't know what motivated you. Right? That's not my business. Whatever it is. What? Okay, so you're trying to figure out which neighbor will drive them the most crazy. I don't know. Okay? Whatever motivated you. The Gemara brings in Machloket. Can we now reverse the sale and kick Ezra out and let Yonatan expand his property? What is the Machloket?
Whether it's being nice or not, yeah,
that's my absolute. Come on, more precise. Adam.
I don't understand the case. Is it that the brothers bought it after the person already owned it and then he sold it?
Okay, so I'm going to have to go back to that case. So let's hold that case. Let's answer the question, and I know you guys want to go back to the Arzoku case. We'll go back to the Arzoku case in a minute. But let's, just because I want to be able to clarify what we've been talking about till now, I want to raise the question, and then we'll go back to the Arzoku. We're going to be on this Gemara tomorrow, right? Meaning, I wanted you, like I told you, I made it short because I wanted you to think, right? What is a machlokes? In both of these cases, Arzoku and indeed the Marmesha, what is the machlokes about saying Suluke Salkinan or Lomis Salkinan? What is the Machloket? Yeah.
Is the fact that they went against what they're supposed to do not to be much capital?
Yeah, meaning what? In the Gemara, what is the Gemara toying with? Yaakov versus Ezra. Or are they describing the spirit of the law, but they're not making it law? And therefore, it's not actionable, what Yaakov said. Meaning, when they say Din de Bar Mitzvah, what they're doing is fundamentally describing the right thing to do. But they're not transforming it into law. They're telling you, this is a fulfillment of Asita Yashar V'Atov. This is the right thing to do. But if you don't do it, what am I supposed to do? Right? Once you've already sold the property, I can't say what you did was illegal. It wasn't illegal. It was not nice. So, okay, people do not nice things all the time. Okay? We know that. That is a statement of life. People do not nice things. There's nothing we can do. Or did they not just describe the biblical value, but they said that this is such an extreme expression of Asita Yashar V'Atov that we weren't willing to leave it at the level of abstract biblical values. What did we want to do? Right? Codify this particular instantiation of Asita Yashar V'Atov into actionable law, into enforceable principles. The Nafka Mina being, if Yaakov already did it, can we kick off the person who bought the property? Misalkinan or lo misalkinan? Right? If they were merely describing the biblical value, so just like I can't enforce, I can't tell you, you must smile when you come in every day. I know this is a hard thing to enforce for a lot of people, right? You must be nice. You must be polite. I mean, you should be polite. You should be nice. You should smile. You should make people feel good. But if you don't, you should make people feel good. If your smile creeps them out, then don't smile, right? be nice, but not every be nice can we enforce, right? So one way of looking at Dina de Bar Mitzvah is that that's a misnomer. It's not Dina de Bar Mitzvah. They're saying it's Bar Mitzvah, right? Meaning the way you should treat your person and neighbor, there's a nice way of doing it. You do it, great. You don't do it, fine. The other way is to say, no, the rabbis said, this is such an obvious and such an extreme expression of Asita Yashar V'Atov, of goodness, that we chose to not leave it in the realm of amorphous values, but to codify it, or codify it, however you want to say that word, right, into law, to formalize it. Yes, Yonatan.
Why
would
you ever non-codify something like this?
Why wouldn't you do it? Okay, good. Yeah, why not? If you don't formalize it, then it will be unenforceable. Why would you do it that way?
Well, I'm saying, like, something like, you know, you must smile when you come in the morning. That would be, in any way, unenforceable. But, I mean, even if you manage to...
Good. So one... Oh, so that's what you mean. So good. One reason that the rabbis would choose not to formalize something is because it's just not enforceable. Not everything that's the right thing to do is enforceable. Right? It's just not. It's just not practical. It's not pragmatic. Good. That's one reason. Why else? Yeah, I think, right, the same thing that the Ramban said, right, is that, right, what is really the yesod of the Ramban, right? The Ramban's point, okay, and again, this is one of the reasons I wanted to do this sugya. First, the lumdus is really nice, but also the meta point that's being made here is very important. The Ramban is saying the Torah could not have listed everything. Now, you'll tell me, what do you mean it couldn't have? God could have. But I want you to think for a moment. How many people do you know who either fit this problem or criticize Orthodox Judaism for having this problem, right, think that the only things that are valuable in life are law or halacha? How many of you have ever met a person in your life, okay, good, where you look at them and you say, you're missing the point, right? You're so obsessed in the details that you're missing the forest for the trees. I think that the Ramban's point is that the Torah intentionally comes back and tells you, we're not going to put every tree here. We put certain mitzvot, like Vatita Vashratov, to tell you, when you're finished setting up the trees and planting all the trees, take a moment to look at the forest and realize that your life should be guided by overarching principles. There's a coherence to life. The more that you codify every little and formalize every little thing that you should do, the more you forget, or the easier it is to forget, that life should be guided by coherent values, and that life cannot be reduced into just law. It just can't. Nor should it be. Meaning, there are things that we want you to do that we don't force you to do.
Well, I think you would burden that. It's also that, I mean, if you were to codify everything into law, then part of the idea, I think, is that you have this choice, and you made this choice one way or the other, and that is what makes this life either a good or bad mistake. If there was no choice, we would just be...
So I would have to push you a little bit on that, meaning you always have the choice to keep the law or not keep the law. Right? So there is always choice, but I think I'll put it differently. The type of choice you have to make when is different. Meaning, the choice to keep the law or not can be a choice of submission. The choice of whether to live a life that is in line with values that are not formalized is a choice of whether I want to be a good person, not just a submissive person. It's a choice of whether I want to engage with values and form a coherent worldview. By telling us that the Torah doesn't want to list everything as law, but rather wants things to remain on the level of value, and force you, therefore, in the gray, to ask yourself, is this right? Not just, is it mutter? And not just chayav or usher, but is it right? You're creating a culture of people who, if they actually follow this, aren't just submissive and obedient, but are thoughtful and good and religious and kind, right? There's a positive religious, moral, educational goal to actively choosing to not formalize everything. It forces people to be engaged with the big picture in an active way and not just stumble across it by accident because they kept enough trees. It forces them to actively be involved in living a life in line with those values. The Ramban says that for the Torah, but I think the rabbis sometimes say, you know what, but it's not worth people running amok in this case, so we're going to formalize it. But if they did it always, you would lose exactly what the Torah wanted. Meaning, as it is, the Rabbanan, both Chazal and later rabbis, etc., have added thousands and thousands of layers of formal law and intricacies. But every time you do it, you gain in the sense that now people are more likely to do it. You lose in the fact that you have given up on that moral responsibility that and religious responsibility that existed before you formalized it. Right? So there is a real cost here. So I think that's what I would say. Yeah, Jacob. If you don't what?
Like, there might be all these like directions and all these like layers of thought. If you choose to not do that, are you at fault or not following?
When they formalized it, yes, because now it's formal law. Right?
Even now, like, it was a lot of focus on how to get out to make
law. Oh, good. Right? Very good. And the question... So this is always the question, right? Meaning, by presenting it as law, right? If it really is law, then you violate. But you do it... Remember, this is the Nitziv's point on the Chafetz Chaim. When something isn't codified into law, you lose something by pretending it is. Right? Remember, that was the Nitziv's critique that we read when we were doing the Tzaka Sugis against the Chafetz Chaim, which is, right? Right? At some level, why do you need a book called Ava Chesed? Why is it... Do you need... Right? It's like these books, like... You don't need a 5,000-page book on the laws of being nice. You don't. And you lose something in it. Right? You lose something actively in it. Right? If it's law, then fine. You can't violate it. But if it's not law, you lose something by presenting it as if it is. Because what you're doing is you're being a reductionist. You're saying that the only thing that's valuable is law. But the Ramban point is that Torah doesn't want you to think that the only thing that's valuable is law. He wants you to recognize there's a bigger picture and live your life in accordance with principles and not just laws. Also laws. We're not telling you to go against the law, but not only. Okay? And like I said, so the first hakira I would say in the Gemara, and tomorrow, because we're at time, so tomorrow we'll come back and I'll more precisely describe what's going on in the Gemara. But even just as machlokes, okay, but let's say you didn't do it. Can I enforce it? Can I remove you from the property or not? That's a machloket where the Gemara is asking, but what were we doing when we said din de bar mitzvah? Were we describing and articulating the biblical value, but leaving at the level of value, which is therefore not enforceable? Or were we codifying it? Were we formalizing, in which case it's enforceable? We haven't yet gotten to the question, which, as we'll see, is Rashi and Tosfot, which is, because here, everyone agrees that letting Yoho buy the property is the right thing to do. So here it's just a question of, is it formalized or not formalized, and therefore enforceable or not enforceable? We haven't gotten to the bigger question, or the even sharper question, which is, what if you could come up with a case where enforcing the law would be counterproductive to the stated motivation for the law? Right? We haven't gotten there yet. Right? So far, all the Gemara is doing is it enforceable? Meaning, is it left on the layer of value, or is it moved to law? Okay? So tomorrow, we'll come back to the Gemara. I'm hoping that we finish the sugya tomorrow. If we don't, we don't. Right? But I'm hoping that we do. But with this very careful sort of outlining the ways in which Chazal can choose to formalize value, I want you to think through this Gemara, and I want you to very carefully think through the Machloket Rashi Tosfot in Bava Batra in the one or two lines in the Gemara that I gave you. Okay? That's the goal. Is this clear? And like I said, this is a very important thing, because as I showed you from the Rambam in Perek Yudalef Hilchos Avel, the exact same type of conceptual lumdish question you have to ask by Bikur Cholim, by Nichum Avelim, right? This isn't the only time the rabbis do it. Dina Dar Metra happens to be Asita V'Yashma Tov. But it's true of Avkol Recha Gamocha. And Avkol Recha Gamocha, it comes up there, but it comes up in other places where you have to ask. So I'll give you an example just to understand this, and this is a whole shiur. But Chazal also say that from Va'afkar Yechad Kamocha, we derive that when you stone people, you should stone them naked, because when you enforce the death penalty, it should be done V'hafkel recha kamocha bror lo mita yafeh. And if someone is stoned with clothes on, the padding will slow down his death. And therefore it's a violation of v'hafkel recha kamocha. So the Gemara then says, but it depends on whether it's a woman or a man. Because a woman will prefer her kavod over her physical pain and not a man. Right? And the way v'hafkel recha kamocha is working in that Gemara is very complicated. Right? Okay, good. Think about it for tomorrow. Try to go through as much of the Gemara as you can. And if you finish this Gemara, so then the Gemara in Bava Batra with Rashi and Tosfos.